And hello, everyone. Welcome to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Tim Phillips.
Vince Masson.
Candace LePage. Nailed it, guys.
Yeah. Twice is the charm.
It's nice how we can all, you know, be appreciative of our of each other's efforts and, you know, just, you know, it's New Year's, so why not?
New Year, new us.
Yes. All right. So we hope everyone had a good New Year, and thank you for tuning in. And Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be actually not one movie. We're going to do a special New Year's episode. We're going to count down our lists of the top three worst movies of 2018, and then we're going to look ahead to the top three movies we're looking forward to in 2019. As I observed the other day on Open Sources, it's Blade Runner year.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's Blade Runner year.
It does not
feel
does not feel like Blade Runner year.
Yeah, no, there's no flying cars. What's up with that?
Amongst other things.
Blade Runner, of course. That didn't go over my head at all. No.
Is there a new Blade Runner movie coming out? Oh, no. Yeah. Now I... Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Just remember back to the 80s.
Yeah. Remember the 80s. That's my motto. Anyway, so we're going to start off with our top three of the worst of 2018. I'm very excited to see what everyone else has come up with. Since we started with Candace during the last week's show, the best of the year, Tim, why don't you start us off with your number three worst of the year?
Okay, I have to preface this by saying when we're saying worst of the year, I think I do a pretty good job avoiding the really bad movies. At least this year I did. So I've done more of a list of most disappointing movies, mm-hmm. even though I've enjoyed most of them. So it's I don't have one that I hate as much as Vince hates the Black Panther. I don't have one.
This is the most Canadian segment. It's like, I'm so sorry. I have to hate one of you.
This is a slightly disappointing film.
Yeah, it's very.
And I have to say, it's just Black Panther. There's no
drop the the. Yeah. Yeah.
Le Black Panther.
Oh, my.
Okay. So my number three worst?
Sure.
I put Bad Times at El Royale.
What?
I was disappointed.
It's a throwdown.
I was so looking forward to that movie, I enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed the opening, and spoiler alert, I really like John Hamm in it, and he's not in it after a certain point in the movie.
after a surprising point in the movie, there's no more John Hamm. Yeah. It's true.
I really liked him as like the FBI agent investigating. I liked when it was going down that road.
That's also a spoiler.
Yeah, that's a spoiler as well. It's full of spoilers. The cult leader stuff, I thought it was entertaining, but I didn't keep me fixated on the film. I didn't think it was really advanced the plot that much. I thought
it was the plot.
It was like Chris Hemsworth is just
because you wanted a movie about an undercover cop doesn't mean that was the plot of the movie.
That would have been a better plot.
The cult
I think.
Leader was the plot.
The cult leader. I like the singing. I thought there's a lot about her I liked. It's just in true Canadian sense, I'm saying I was mildly disappointed by it.
It was not for me.
It was not for me.
All right, Vince.
Well, my number three is actually Jigsaw. Even though you kind of go into these movies expecting them to be bad, this one was like particularly bad.
Yeah.
And I really think that they should just like put an end to this now that Jigsaw is dead. You know what I mean?
Jigsaw's been dead since part three.
Yeah, yeah. So they're trying to milk it. I appreciate it. You know what I mean? There's always people that are like, oh, who keeps going to see these like Saw movies? It's like, I am
now
one
you
of
know,
those
it's
people.
Vince. It's yeah. Vince.
I actually, they're like the biggest guilty pleasure ever, but this one was just so bad. And mostly because they didn't even try to uphold the traditional Saw like formula, which is like the traps and whatever.
Yeah.
From what I recall, I don't know. I forgot this movie like pretty quickly, but from what I recall, there just wasn't enough.
Yeah.
There it was. Yeah.
It's. I watched it too, and I was. It is a guilty pleasure for sure.
Yeah.
The Saw series. But yeah, it's like they tried to DQ out a bit by like going on about how, no, it's really the Jigsaw this time. He's like alive again.
It's like Jaws the Revenge. Like, no, yeah. he's got.
That is a great comparison. It is the Jaws the Revenge of the Saw movies.
Like, no, he actually had a cousin that was like alive the whole time.
And it's also Tobin Bell.
Yeah.
That would have made more sense. Yeah. Poor Jigsaw. Anyway, number three.
Yes. So I fall into the same place as Tim, which is that I just, if I think the movie's going to be bad, I just don't see it. So I really struggled with this list. And so I cheated. I broke it. So
this should be interesting.
Someone had to.
Yeah.
So I do have some movies on my list, but I'm going to start with, I'm sorry, I'm bringing TV in for a second. Because mostly that's actually what I've been watching, really.
Okay.
So I have been rewatching all of the Star Trek everything since the originals. I think I started like 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. I don't even remember. I have been stalled on Voyager for all of this year. I've gotten up to episode 15 of season one. And It's really...
It doesn't get better.
It's really, really difficult, guys. I mean, I watched it a little bit when it was on, but man, I'm having some trouble going back to that, which is really bad because once I get to Enterprise, it's going to be... This is going to take me until, like, 2050 at the rate I'm going.
Okay. Voyager was this weird thing where it's like they didn't know what to do with it until season four.
Yeah,
and season four is the high point. And you'll plow through season four, and then it'll be a struggle to get through five and most of six. And then seven was decent.
Great.
So there you have. But I actually, the thing about Enterprise, too, is that it's also a rough couple of first years on Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets better
good,
in season three.
Then it gets canceled.
Basically.
Yeah. Welcome to television. I don't know why I bother.
Okay. Cool message. Number three is Rampage, which is based on the video game, which is about a giant lizard, a giant ape, and a giant wolf just wrecking stuff. The movie is about how Dwayne The Rock Johnson is trying to save his friend, who is an ape, but becomes the giant ape when they all three of these creatures descend on Chicago after their DNA has been messed with by some mad scientist.
This sounds like a winner to me.
It's garbage. Rock.
Coming from the one that put Black Panther as number two. Yeah, sounds like a winner.
Yeah. You said Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That's all I need.
Yeah.
I feel like he's wasted because the point of the thing is supposed to be the monsters destroying cities. Mm. It's set in Chicago, which I gotta say, like, let's leave Chicago alone. Chicago has suffered enough. Movie Chicago anyway. But you know the plot with the evil corporation, Malin Ackerman, wasted in this because she is such a gifted comedic actress, but she's like just given nothing to do. The real star of this should have been Jeffrey Dean Morgan as like this FBI agent who's like this like stereotypical Texan guy. He's like got cowboy boots on, he's got a big belt buckle, he's got like a long barreled six shooter, and he's kind of like Tom Bombadil, where like when Dwayne Johnson gets into trouble, like he comes in and goes, "Well, now, well, can I help you guys get out of this situation?" And it's like if he had been the main character, I think it probably would have been an improvement. But because, yeah, I think that Dwayne Johnson and Brad Payton were trying to recreate what they did with San Andreas in Rampage, and it just doesn't work. Because
San Andreas was about, I can see how it's not going to work.
It was campy.
It's already missing something.
Yes, it's. I like San Andreas a lot. It's campy fun, and I like how the daughter in it is not dumb. How she's actually smart and is able to like get out of stuff on her own. But they try the same formula. Rock is, he's got PTSD. He's, you know, he's trying to save his friend. He's flying helicopters. And it's like, no, this is Rampage. The point is the monsters destroy things. Just give me that. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan, like, doing random Texas accents. And I think we have a movie.
Stick with Skyscraper, folks.
let me just say, if you have to choose between Rampage and Skyscraper, yes, choose Skyscraper.
I played Rampage as a kid, the video game.
So did I, so,
yeah.
Arcade version.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it, but I don't know how you make a movie out of it.
Well, the problem is they pick the wrong video games to turn into movies. It's like, it's not the formula.
You're not wrong.
Adapting them. It's, you have chosen the wrong video games. It's like Assassin's Creed, Rampage, you know what I mean? Like,
but I can see how Assassin's Creed would be a good movie.
Yeah, you'd think you'd find a story.
Sure, maybe that was a bad example. There are occasions where they just take, you know, they just poorly adapt it. But
like Detective Pikachu, I'm not sure how that's going to turn out.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, number two from Tim.
My number two is The Meg. Again, I was entertained by it, but I was disappointed.
Yes.
I thought they could have gone way campier.
Yes.
Just way over the top. Could have been a cult classic, just crazy shark movie. I was really excited when it started off with Dwight from The Office calling the shots on the on the ship. I'm like, this is going to be good. I'm laughing just seeing him there in such a leadership role. And then it kind of fizzles. There's these climactic moments throughout, but kind of see them coming, and it is good. It's entertaining, but you could expect so much more. It could have just gone way over the top, you know, like Sharknado times 100 and just go really campy with it, but they didn't. They tried to make it a little more serious, and there's a little too many secondary characters I found that were with like serious subtext and stuff. You know,
it's not that there are too many secondary characters; it's that there's too many secondary characters who make it to the end of the movie.
Oh, mm-hmm. Everybody must die! See,
thank
now,
you.
I will say that I was excited for this film, and then I heard your review of it, and I went, "Well, maybe I'll just see it like on a cheap Tuesday or something," because it sounds like it's going to be disappointing, and then I never got around to seeing it.
Yeah.
So it would be on my list. Most likely, if I hadn't already heard your review and chose not to make it.
We save people with
the power.
Yeah.
That's true.
Power of influence. Right, Vince? Black Panther's the movie to see.
Yeah.
A second time.
Yeah. Hey, if you want to waste that much of your time, then by all means, okay? I've given you five great other movies the previous episode that you can...
All right, Vince, you got number two.
Well, since I can't, I need some time to think about my number one. I'm just going to go for Black Panther as my number two. And I want to be very clear that I don't, like, hate this movie. I just feel like it has been blown completely out of proportion. And you can't really – it's sad that you can't really, like, talk about the quality of the movie objectively without – the politics of everything kind of coming into play. It's like, right. I understand that it's an important kind of, social kind of movie. I just didn't think that it was that good of a movie, period, though. It's like, all through the year, people were like, listen, this Black Panther movie, you have to see it. And I was like, I'm not into the superhero stuff. But this one is really getting some like crazy good reviews, so I'm going to give it a chance. And it was the exact same thing that you get every single time. And I don't know why you brought up Lion King as like a comparison. It's like that's exactly what it is. It's just the Lion King, just kind of the same formula. I don't know. I don't know.
You know what? To give you some credit, there's an episode of Slash Filmcast from February or March where they interview somebody who has like similar reservations about the social implications of Black Panther.
Right.
And he's a film critic, person of color too.
Yes.
So it's there are discussions to be taken out of this, I think, that can be further explored. So you're not entirely wrong is what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you.
Well, no. And I will say, like, you know, when you look at the films that were made this year, there were a lot of really great films that were Afrocentric, right? That were big stories and little stories of people living experiences that the four white people sitting around this table don't have. And so you're right. It is really, you know, to just make Black Panther like, oh, because it's the one that white audiences are actually going to watch because it's also a superhero movie.
Right.
Because we don't. Not we at the round the table. I think we around the table do actually take the time to go see other stories.
Mm-hmm.
And some other people don't. And that's fine because they don't have time for it. They don't, you know, they've got lives. So, hey, it's a superhero. It's something like Pablum that I was going to see anyways.
Right.
And it's given me. So,
but even then, how is it important in that regard? Daniel Kaluuya is riding a CGI rhinoceros. Like, how does anybody extract
like
any deep thematic like messages from that? I just don't understand
it. I'm pretty sure Michael B. Jordan's character is the one that has the thematic messages, not Daniel Kaluuya.
Okay, well, his like classic, you know.
Oh, it's a story that we've seen a million times before in probably better movies.
Right. Well, there you go. Discussion done.
All right. Good discussion over. Candace, what is
All
your
right,
number
hold on,
two?
I got sidetracked. What was my number two? Oh, yes. So this is interesting, especially following this conversation, because...
it's so Black Panther.
Yeah. So it's not Black Panther.
Mind blown.
She had a week to mull it over. Yeah. My best and worst.
No, so... And it's, I hate to put it on the list because I really, really liked this film, but it was just so not what I was expecting when I walked in. And it's Sorry to Bother You.
Ah, interesting.
Like a really great film. But for people who haven't seen it, I don't know what other people were expecting to see when they walked in, but I kind of thought that it was going to be a bit of a, like a drama, maybe comedy, social sort of thing about what it's like being a Black person working in an office and trying to fit in. And that is not what it's about at all. This went pretty quickly into like, what? It's going, it was great. It was really good, but it just really went a totally unexpected way for me. And so I came out going, I didn't not like that film at all. But I thought I was doing this tonight, and instead I was doing that, which was sort of a weird turn.
Interesting. Yeah, that might be one of those movies where you either go with it or you don't.
Yeah, and I mean, I did. I did go with it, but it was sort of like... And I was with someone, too, and I was like, I don't know how this is going over.
Because
this whole thing has gone like a really weird direction.
When you watch a weirdo movie, if you have somebody else, that's always the toughest thing.
Yeah.
How are they responding to
this? There wasn't a lot of talk after the film. It was like, okay, well, see you later. have a good night.
My number two is The Girl in the Spider's Web, which is the continuation of The Girl in the Dragon Tattoo. I knew that the guy had died, the Stieg Larsson, and after he completed the first three books, but I didn't know they had carried on into, because he planned 10 books. But they did, and they decided to adapt this, the fourth book, The Girl in the Spider's Web. Claire Foy, who is very great in everything but this, is Lisbeth Salander. The problem is that this, as with the Fincher Dragon Tattoo, they file off her rough edges. They try to make it about her trying to find, like, sympathy and trying to find human connections, and in this one she's teamed with a little boy that she has to protect. The plot, it's like a James Bond movie but with Lisbeth Salander as James Bond, which I you know gets away from what I think the theme of the books, which are these like pot boilers, these sort of little you know, crime thriller kind of things. It's not about like saving the world from, you know, hacker codes that can shut down nuclear missile sites or whatever the heck she was doing in this movie. And there are scenes where it's like she's super smart and ahead of the game, and there are other scenes where she's dumb. It's like whatever the plot calls for. It's just, it was incredibly disappointing. It also comes from Fede Alvarez, who did the Evil Dead remake, which was good, and Don't Breathe, which was good. It just felt like, you know, we can make a franchise, and if we make one Lisbeth Salander movie, we can make more. And it just sort of plays into sort of like the worst things about Hollywood right now. or they get a cool new actress, tired old franchise, put them together and try to make money, and it failed, and it deserved to fail, and it was utterly disappointing. And the guy who played Mikhail Blomkvist in it, I can't say this enough, he sucked. He sucked the bag. It, you know, he had no charisma
don't
at
really
all.
I don't really know what that
means. It, but it just...
Milk bag?
Let's okay. go with milk bag. But he... It's just like there's supposed to be this connector between Lisbeth and Blomkvist, and it's like, no, because this guy is milquetoast, and she would have nothing to do with somebody who is milquetoast. Like, anyway, it was... It was
he's no Daniel toast. Craig? Is that what you're saying? It was Daniel Craig,
I
right?
could believe... Yeah, no, he, Daniel Craig was Blomkvist in the remake, and I could believe that, because Daniel Craig is an interesting mofo, but this the guy who played Blomkvist in Girl in Spider's Web, no, no. I don't know where he's from, but he can go back. Anyway. Yeah. Number one of your most disappointing, Tim.
Number one, my most disappointing, The Other Side of the Wind, which I saw on Netflix. That's the lost Orson Welles movie. Basically, he spent like 6 years working on it, I guess. And it's interesting to watch. There's... You know, really good cinematography. So it shows that the cinematographer, maybe Orson Welles, like you said, Greg Toland, and then later in life in the 70s.
See last episode for this intro.
Yeah. Except he had been directing films since the 40s.
Yeah. Yeah. But I probably would watch it again. It's a very random pastiche of all these scenes, and it's all about, it's about this director who John Huston plays, who's very much, I think, based on Orson Welles, but Orson Welles denied that it was about him. But it's kind of an ego trip about him, and it's like the 70th birthday party that they're throwing for him. And everyone in the movie has cameras, because it's the 70s, and everyone has 16mm now, and they're shooting film. It's kind of interesting in that respect, but there's really no story or anything to it, no real plot. And it just sort of meanders around, and at the end of the day, maybe if I watch it again, it'd be interesting. But it strikes me as one of those things where, you know, Orson Welles seen as a genius. So this comes out in 2018, and it's getting rave reviews. It's like if the Beatles put out an album of them gurgling water, you'd get 5 stars nowadays. You know, so it's kind of one of those things where. It's interesting.
If you don't like it, it's because you don't get it.
Yeah, you don't get it, right? Yeah. There's no threads to it. Like a lot of his best work, like Touch of Evil, Citizen Kane, it all those have plot. You know, this was just kind of like an ego trip. I found.
Yeah.
So I was disappointed by that.
All right.
It wasn't the worst. It's just disappointing.
Vince, your number one.
Well, my number one wasn't actually a terrible movie, objectively speaking, but it was very disappointing to me. It was Paul Greengrass's Netflix movie, 22 July.
Right, right, right.
About the Norwegian mass shooter that occurred in...
I think it was 13.
Really didn't like this movie. It like left a really bad taste in my mouth too. Almost like the way that he had shot it was just very inappropriate for like the subject matter. Mm. And I remember at the end of our review, I was saying that there actually is a Norwegian filmmaker doing their version of this. So I think that's going to be a little bit more accurate. But it was just, I remember you saying it was like trying to be three different movies. It was like a mass shooter film, then kind of a recovery movie and this legal drama as well. And it didn't do any of it particularly well.
Right.
And I think this was a very compelling story. Like, you know, people maybe in this part of the world aren't that familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't think it was very... I didn't think it was a good... depiction of this
I would agree
kind of stuff
so
that's my number one.
All right, number one from the C note.
Well, it's Ready Player One.
Yes,
I think a lot of us have forgotten that movie even came out this year.
I know I had.
So forgettable.
Yeah.
It was poor. I went into
not cash poor, but yeah.
I went into it expecting it to be poor, so it wasn't disappointing. It actually gave me exactly what I expected. Well, maybe a little less than I expected, even. yeah, I mean, the book. I enjoyed the book. The book has its own issues, which many people have talked about.
It's got subscriptions.
Yeah. The
sorry.
That was funny.
I apologize.
Yeah. yes. The movie, I think, decided to try to deal with some of those issues, and I don't know. It was not good. It was a movie made for young people now, as opposed to a book that was made for people our age now. I don't know. It was not good. Also, ugh, CGI. I just don't want it. I just don't.
I would agree with all of that. It would have been so much better if it wasn't just about like the nostalgia porn. If they had put effort into actually how people reconcile, you know, how people are able to take the culture and the nostalgia and sort of recontextualize it, because otherwise it's just a kid driving around in the Back to the Future car. Big whoop. It wasn't great, and I don't know why Spielberg wanted to do it, because I don't think he had the distance, because it's all about him, right?
Yeah. But it's like, okay, if so much of it is CGI too, can it really be called a Spielberg film? Like, I get that you're kind of in the, you're directing the overall vision of it, but at a certain point, don't the CGI people have to kind of put their own touch on it, and then it becomes less of a Spielberg-like vision than it does the CGI people? Aren't the CGI people just saying...
Do you feel the same way about Zemeckis's films?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then that's fair.
That's a great debate that we will get into some other day, because I have to do my number one, then we have to take a break. My number one is Death Wish, the remake by Eli Roth of the 70s classic starring Charles Bronson. Was everything about this felt wrong? I will say that Bruce Willis is more awake in this one than he has been in most of his recent movies, which was a good sign, probably a bad sign. He was doing Death Wish, but it didn't have the teeth to go where it should have gone. It sort of had way too much. Like, there's a montage of him, like, training with a gun that's set too bad to the bone, which is a completely false tone, because either you take this seriously or you're not. You're going to do it campy. It couldn't decide what one it wanted to do. There were humor notes that were completely wrong. Plus, the whole thing is icky, about a movie about an old white guy going around shooting predominantly minority people. Yeah. It's just wrong for the times. Eli Roth doesn't have he doesn't have the skill to sort of be able to make this like a proper commentary on the times. You know,
did he write the script?
I don't know if he did or not, but
it just seemed like it was one of those things he found on a pile of scripts and was like, yeah.
It's just wrongheaded on so many levels, and it could have been compelling, but not the way Eli Roth did it.
Right.
It feels icky. It feels bad. It feels wrong. It's everything we hate about the culture. It's just not good.
Noted.
Thank you. On that note, I will call for a break here, and we are going to come back with a list of three movies we're looking forward to in the year 2019. And to get us ready for that, we're going to look ahead even further to the year 2525. So we're going to take a nice musical break here and come back with more end credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, both campus and community radio.
Maybe he'll look around himself and say, guess it's time for the judgment day. Or tear it down and start again. Oh, oh. In the year 95, I'm kinda wondering if man is gonna be alive. He's taken everything this old earth can give, and he is.
Thanos did exactly what he said he was going to do. He wiped out 50% of all living creatures.
We lost, all of us. We lost friends. We lost family. We lost a part of ourselves. This is the fight of our lives.
This is gonna work, Steve.
I know it is. Because I don't know what I'm gonna do if it doesn't.
And that was a clip from the trailer of Avengers Endgame. Which
if
is...
only it was the end. Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Amen.
Are you channeling Vince there? I take it this is on nobody's list.
It's not on mine.
It's
I
not
can
on
say
mine.
That much.
Terrific. All right, let's start off with our actual list then. So, Tim, what is the number three movie you're looking forward to this year?
Number three on my list is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Ah, yes. Yeah. That is also
it
my number
almost
three.
Almost made it on my list.
Yes.
I really am interested to see what he's going to do with the subject matter. We talked about Black Klansman earlier and how walking a bit of a tightrope with this and this subject matter, given the gruesome murders. I think we're learning more about that. It's about some like fringe Hollywood actors who happen to be part of that scene.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
I'm really interested to see what he does with it, because most of his movies have some really dark humor in it. Will he continue with that or will he play it straight? And it looks like a really interesting cast he has. And even like Al Pacino has a smaller supporting role, it looks like. So that's interesting because Quentin Tarantino is known for like resurrecting careers. I didn't know that Al Pacino's career was over, although he's made some really bad choices recently.
Recently? But,
5 years, maybe. But yeah, it looks like I'm really looking forward to it. I really liked Hateful Eight. It was one of my favorite movies. I put it, his last movie. So
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping he continues on and continues strong.
Mm-hmm. Vince, your number three.
Well, actually, my number three, surprisingly, is the Todd Phillips Joker movie.
Ah.
Show you that I am actually still open-minded to these, like, you know. No, this one seems a little bit more kind of up my alley. It seems a little bit more serious, maybe. I'm a huge fan of Joaquin Phoenix, and I feel like he picks, you know, a lot of projects that have a lot of integrity to them.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that kind of is making me a little bit more optimistic as well. Todd Phillips, you know, what can you really say about him? It's like maybe he will, maybe he won't do it, but yeah.
It'll be a new direction for him.
It's, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and maybe he's been teetering that way if you think about War Dogs and
yeah.
But
yeah, it seems like a tone that he might be familiar with or good at.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Candace, you're number three.
Well, in surprising news, in the role of, or in the Battle of Captain Marvels,
yes.
I'm going DC.
Oh.
I know, right? DC, like, so DC is actually my favorite comic book. Like, I prefer DC comics to Marvel.
Bold
DC
statement. Yeah.
has really done a terrible job with their films for a while, but the television,
yeah.
you know, they've been doing great with that. I mean, Marvel, just end it already.
It's a machine.
Come on. I know, it's really, you know, we're at a point with Marvel where nothing has any stakes whatsoever anymore. But Shazam, I'm excited to see Shazam, and I think a big part of it is, well, I don't know. There's so many big parts of it. But it looks like it's going to be fun. I mean, Shazam kind of looks like it's going to be the Deadpool of the DC universe. I'm not even sure if this is actually going to take part in the universe that they've created, because it doesn't look like it or feel like it at all.
Which is, I say, is probably the direction they should have taken to begin with. It's just like, okay, do you want to make a movie about Shazam or Wonder Woman or Aquaman? Okay, here's the character, here's, you know, what do you need? here's the budget. Okay, go and make your Aquaman movie. I mean, that should have been the approach all along. And that goes to speak to the Joker one thing as well, that, you know, it has no connection whatsoever to any of the expanded universe malarkey.
Speaking of the worst things about Hollywood, though, is now you're seeing that with the prime example. You've got David F. Sandberg, okay, a guy who started with Lights Out, short film, obviously got some big Hollywood attention, kind of launched his career. The guy apparently had such bad credit that he could not actually rent an apartment when he got to Hollywood, like him and his wife. They actually had to, like, buy a house around there. And now being given this tasteless superhero movie again. It's like they just do this. They're just like, here, which one do you want to do? Now go do your superhero
movie. Say,
it's like, come on,
I would
man.
Say that it's his second franchise because he did Annabelle Creation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
So it's not like, but I see your point. Because,
and he said on Twitter, he was like, whenever people ask me what I'm doing, I tell them Shazam. And they're always like, oh, you mean that movie with Shaquille O'Neal? You're doing a remake of that.
With LeBron James as the
yes,
theme.
Yes, it's a good idea. Yeah,
I could see that.
Although I admit to being someone who's looking forward to the Marvel, Captain Marvel, because I like Brie.
The nostalgia factor will be fun, too.
Yeah, and it's set in the 90s. But I also like Brie Larson, and I think, you know, having more lady superheroes is not a bad thing. So, yeah, my number three is also Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. The cast is incredible with, you have Damian Lewis playing Steve McQueen. You have Margot Robbie as Sharon Tate. Emile Hirsch is in it. Dakota Fanning is Squeaky Fromm, who people may not know the name, but she was one of Manson's followers, and she became sort of famous on her own when she tried to assassinate Gerald Ford in, I think it was 75. So that will be, I'll find that. There's also Tarantino regulars like Zoe Bell, Tim Roth, Michael Madsen, Kurt Russell's in this. Leo DiCaprio as a sort of a struggling actor who was like famous for a Western TV show, now trying to make it in movies, and Brad Pitt as his stuntman. That sounds really, really interesting to me. And it'll be on a terms of a filmmaking level. This is Tarantino's first film outside of the supervision of the Weinsteins, who, of course, there's a very particular reason why. There's a big deal made about, you know, his control issues, let's say, in terms of like showing the script to people. So with complete creative reign, is Tarantino as on point, or were the Weinsteins maybe secret manipulators in terms of like getting him to massage his vision? That will be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they were really massaging his vision that much.
You never know. I think there are creators who, I think Neil Blomkamp is like that. Once, you know, Peter Jackson was the executive producer of District 9. And then when we go to Elysium and Chappie, where he sort of has this more creative control, things sort of went off the rails. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. We'll see. Not to compare Tarantino to Blomkamp, but anyway. Yeah. Your number two, Tim.
My number two is a movie that came out in 2018, which I haven't seen yet. and it's called Sorry to Bother You. it looks really interesting to me. And
you saw the very Canadian title and you were like, looks good. Yeah.
This would be my autobiography.
Yeah,
would be
exactly.
Called Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah. But, it is very good.
Yeah,
it's just surprising.
Surprising, yeah. So you've tempered my expectations a little bit. Thank you, Candace. Mm-hmm. But I like weird stuff. It looks pretty out there. Telemarketing milieu with like science fiction sprinkled in. So we'll see how it pans out. I think I'll still seek it out, but at least now I won't be as disappointed.
Yeah.
If it doesn't
the sprinkling kind of becomes like a shower.
Or you could be right overwhelmed by its greatness that you're prepared for disappointment.
Right. It could be.
Oh, wow. This is...
That's...
It's, yeah. Anyway.
Blew my mind.
I'm very eager to hear Vince's number two.
Well, unfortunately, it'll be a slight letdown because it's also Tarantino's movie. Here's the thing, okay? I think, like, he went a little bit off the rails with The Hateful Eight, honestly. Like, he got way too self-indulgent going in with the 70mm
yeah,
when it did not need to
that.
Be
yeah.
in this, like, confined cabin that didn't really, like, exploit what I think his strengths are as a storyteller. Apparently, this script is going to be the most Pulp Fiction-esque that he's ever done since mm-hmm. that movie, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I you know, I think he learned from... Or he learns from his failures, if you will allow me that.
Mm.
I remember he took it very personally when Death Proof bombed, you know, and then kind of came back and never really, like, fell into that trap again.
Mm.
So I think he's like, okay, Hateful Eight didn't really work for a lot of my fans. Like, now it's time to go back to or pull all...
Right.
Pull out all the stops, so to speak.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. And DiCaprio, of course, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't need any more money. It's like he probably only chooses projects that, you know, resonate with him in some way. So I always trust his taste. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, there's always new supermodels to meet.
Well, if DiCaprio yeah. stops making money, he'll never save the dolphins.
That's also true.
Yeah.
Yeah,
or stop Chinooks from taking
you guys
place in
yeah.
Alberta.
You have one more burn for DiCaprio.
Oh no, global warming. Why has the temperature gone up 10 degrees in one day?
All right, well, I'm glad we all got our digs in on Mr. DiCaprio. I don't think it's entirely unreasonable, though, what you were saying about the Weinsteins. I don't think it's unreasonable that they
yeah.
massage Tarantino's ego. I think he's totally that kind of person that would do that. You know what I mean? He was like a guy in a movie store for years, and then he was kind of thrust into the mainstream of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I've seen personally, I think, his ego just inflate massively over the years. So I don't think it's unreasonable to expect that these guys had been telling him he could do no wrong. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, I don't think anybody gave him notes on Django Unchained. I don't think anybody gave him notes on any of these other scripts. Not because I just don't think he can handle, like, the criticism anymore.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah. And I like those movies. So Django Unchained and Hateful Eight. So I think, given what Adam said about them reeling or reining him in at the time, I don't think they were reining him in at all. They were, yeah, they were probably boosting his ego and just saying you can do whatever.
But they were with him from
do.
The beginning, so if they, if anyone could sort of like give him notes if they wanted to, they, you know, there was that sort of comfort level, or he would take their advice more than he would take the advice of someone new coming in to give him the advice now.
But I don't know. You're never expecting a historical document with Tarantino. So it's like
that's
well, I'm
true.
Not
I mean,
expecting
that's not the
some...
way the Second World War went.
It's, yeah, apparently not.
the Nazi hierarchy didn't burn down in a Parisian movie theater. Interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, Candace,
right.
Your number two.
So Once Upon a Time in Hollywood did not make my list. It was number four. I'll just, you know, since we're making the rounds.
Fair enough.
So my number two most anticipated is Whatever Comes from Jordan Peele and Blumhouse Pictures next. So they have something called Us coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about it. It doesn't matter. It says Jordan Peele and it says Blumhouse. I do like horror films, despite the fact that Jason Blumhouse doesn't seem to think that women direct horror films. I do still like what they're putting out. There's also a couple of other Blumhouse pictures coming out this year that I'm sure I will probably see also.
Happy Death Day to you.
Maybe not that one. I don't know. That might be a, like, you know, Sunday afternoon Netflix watch. But I'm really interested in what Jordan Peele does next. I don't think it's coming this year, but I've also just heard that he's been given the Candyman.
Yeah, Candyman
which
franchise.
Which is kind
yeah.
of exciting. Yeah.
Cool.
Could be interesting.
I was thinking about Us, but since I know so little about it, I was wondering. My number two actually is the Todd Phillips Joker. I went from sort of like being like blasé about this, but you know, there was a reporting. I think it was a set report from earlier a couple of months ago about how the inspirations for this are Taxi Driver and The King of Comedy. So, like, very Scorsese-centric.
Right, right.
You know, it's also kind of recasting Gotham City as New York in the 70s and 80s. You know, grimy, slimy, dingy, not a lot of hope left. And in this atmosphere, apparently Thomas Wayne, who is Bruce Wayne's father, is running for the mayor of Gotham. And this comedian played by Joaquin Phoenix gets obsessed with him. And again, it plays into this very much like, let's take the characters and just let a filmmaker tell a good story that doesn't have to fit into a big, broader cinematic universe. I don't know how this will turn out. I still have reservations, but I'm intrigued, and yeah. I'm very interested to see what happens with this.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sounds good.
Vince was speechless.
Yeah, no, yeah. Exactly.
So let's head right into number one most anticipated of the year.
Okay, number one for me is a movie that's out now, mm-hmm. but I haven't seen it yet.
It's the simple thing.
Someone has to break the list every time.
January is going to be a big month for me.
Yeah,
Ernest goes to summer camp.
It's Jingle All the Way. It's on TV all the time, but I still haven't seen it. No. But it's The Favourite by Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yes.
I'm just really interested, given the director. I don't know a whole lot about the subject matter. It looks like it's a period piece. Mm-hmm. I haven't really delved much more into it, but The Lobster was like one of my favorite movies a while back. I just thought it was incredible. It was so different than everything else that's coming out. And The Killing of a Sacred Deer, which was his last one, I didn't like the first time I saw it, and then I just kept thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I watched it again. I'm like, this is really good. Like, this guy's on a different level.
Yeah.
I think, as a filmmaker. So I'm looking forward to seeing this. I don't want to spoil it by reading too much in advance. Probably just go in and see it.
Yeah, and he also did a movie called Dogtooth back in 2009 that was also absolutely unbelievable. And you can also find it at the Guelph Public Library. By the way.
We're sending them a lot of business.
Yes,
Vince, what's your number one?
Well, I'm going to have to echo what Candace said about Jordan Peele. Us is also the movie that I'm looking forward to the most next year. And they just released a screenshot of Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah.
She's kind of huddling with her children. So from what I understand, it's a home invasion thriller. Mm. Something along that lines, but I have to say, Get Out is like a movie that I just has like stuck with me.
Yeah, for sure.
Since that came out, and I remember we did our top five that year, and I don't think I had Get Out on my list, or maybe I had it kind of lower. Everybody else had Get Out, and I just hadn't kind of appreciated what it was, and it took months and months.
Yeah.
But now Get Out is a movie that I just appreciate so much, and I show everybody too. Mm-hmm. Everybody that hasn't seen Get Out, I always show them. It's like such a fast-paced kind of fun movie. So
it's a tight 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So I it's hard for me to believe that somebody who has such a great debut feature could just fall apart on the second feature.
Rom-com.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Soderbergh too, right?
Sure.
Came out of the gate swinging. But Jordan Peele has been like doing, you know, writing, acting, directing in some form or another for so long now. And it's like, I think this is what he really wants to do anyway, is be a filmmaker.
I think the danger is does he get overextended because he's doing this? He's doing The Candyman. He's doing Twilight Zone. For Apple, it's, you know, can he keep that pace? I don't know. Maybe he can.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's had such a like a buildup of ideas, and now he's just in an opportunity to like kind of So that's
Candace, you're number one.
All right, my number one is The Year of Stephen King. it's mostly one movie, but it's a little bit two movies. So both Pet Sematary and It Part Two are coming out this year. So the trailers for Pet Sematary have come out.
And, great trailer, by the way.
Yeah, I'm really surprised. It looks really good, which I did not think was going to happen. The original Pet Sematary was a fine movie, but it kind of was like, who really needs to remake this? I don't know. But it looks like they've done a pretty good job. So I'm excited to see that. But It Part Two, I am definitely looking forward to. This was obviously a favorite book when I was younger. favorite terrible television miniseries when I was in
it
my
was teens. Okay.
Ponytail. Okay. Yeah. Two words, ponytail. Yeah.
And of course, so 2 years ago, the first part came out, and they were so smart about it. They changed the time frame. All this movie, all of these Stephen King things are made for people in my age, right? We grew up with Stephen King, and we're buying our own nostalgia right now. Mm-hmm. And so they reset it for a different time. And so now that makes me even closer now to the characters who are going to be in it, because they're going to be around my age and around the same time frame.
Right, right.
So I'm excited to see what happens there.
Mm-hmm. It's a good cast too.
Yeah, it's a good cast. They made some interesting changes from the book in the first one, and I think that there are some interesting changes that could be made from the book in the second one as well. So. It's a horror film that I kind of know what it's going to be about, so I'm excited to see it.
Outstanding. I took a different tack with my number one. It is Angel Has Fallen. It is the end of the Fallen trilogy, starting with Olympus Has Fallen and London Has Fallen.
This is a trilogy? I had no idea.
Yes.
Yeah, same here.
Olympus Has Fallen, Die Hard in the White House with Gerard Butler as a Secret Service agent who has to save the president when he's taken hostage in the White House. London Has Fallen, it's basically the same plot, but in London. And then Angel Has Fallen. I wonder if this will be like the Die Hard with a Vengeance of the Die Hard in the White House trilogy, where it's going to try and do something completely different or a little bit different, because it apparently involves Gerard Butler's character being framed for the attempted assassination of the new president. And then having to stop the assassination, the actual assassination of the president. Morgan Freeman is now the president, not Aaron Eckhart.
What a world that would be.
Yeah. With Gerard Butler as super agent Mike Banning. But I am intrigued because I find that this is Gerard Butler's wheelhouse. This is a good use of Gerard Butler, not as the guy who comes up with climate change saving technology in Geostorm, but as like a Secret Service agent who will call the Speaker of the House an a-hole on the phone. It also has Tim Blake Nelson. He's the new vice president. He's Morgan Freeman's vice president, which is
interesting.
He's got there's got to be something there. I'm sure that there'll be something. But Nick Nolte's in this as well. So the cast is like really oddball, and I don't know. I think this is going to be campy, cheesy, fun like the other two movies. Fingers crossed.
Just a quick note. I'm surprised that none of us had Vice on our list, by the way, because that actually looks pretty good, and I am kind of looking forward to it. But
I interpreted it as the movies you're looking forward to in like the next year, not yeah. like the next
like
week.
Next week.
Yeah, I had the next week.
Oh, I know you had that.
Like,
too.
This film came out in April, and I have yet to see it.
Yeah. It was it's going to be a fun year. Fingers crossed.
It's going to be another year.
It's going to be another year.
I can promise you that.
What about Toy Story 4? I'm surprised nobody had that.
I hadn't heard it was coming out four times.
They've got a
in one
film. It's I don't know. I'm a little worried that they're overextending this whole thing.
That's
honestly
my concern as well. Mm-hmm. But I found the trailer charming, so.
Yeah, fair enough.
Anyway, we'll leave that there. We'll figure out Toy Story another day. We're going to do a couple of reruns over the next couple of weeks, take a bit of a break, and then come back later in January. Likely with another movie we might be looking forward to, Glass.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's a little tease for you. You can find all our shows at endcreditsradioshow.com. You can find us on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show or on Twitter at End Credits Radio. And we'll go quickly around the room to talk about where we can be found on the internet, and we'll start with you, Tim.
Flash in the Deadpan, you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
And Vince?
You can find me on Twitter at VMassin5.
And Candace?
Do I have to list all of them? Just Google Sin48, CINN48. Tumblr, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, no more Google Plus.
Bold choice, considering I think that doesn't exist anymore. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to my political site, GuelphPolitico.ca. You can stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back in some form next Wednesday at 2 p.m. here on End Credits, and let me just finish off by saying it's been a great year, everybody, even Peter, who sadly wasn't able to be here, and I look forward to continuing on our adventure in 2019.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Nice.
Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to everyone. Thank you. Yes, and we will see you later on in the new year. Take care, everyone.